This is VOA News. I'm Alexis Strope. Following the release of a special counsel report regarding U.S. President Joe Biden's retention of classified information as a private citizen, Biden spoke at a televised address at the White House and took questions from reporters where he emphasized the report's conclusion.
That no charges should be brought against me in this case.
And highlighted the scope of the investigation.
This was an exhaustive investigation going back more than 40 years.
Reading from the special counsel's report, Biden refuted that he, quote, willfully retained the documents.
The decision to decline criminal charges was straightforward. The evidence suggests that Mr. Biden did not willfully retain these documents.
Biden's lawyers earlier blasted the report for what they said were inaccuracies and gratuitous swipes at the president. Russian President Vladimir Putin said in an interview that aired on Thursday that Russia will fight for its interests, but has no interest in expanding its war in Ukraine to other countries such as Poland and Latvia. VOA's Rick Pantaleo reports.
In a video from the Tucker Carlson Network, Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke for the first time since before the Russian invasion of Ukraine with an American journalist.
The threat I think you're referring to is a Russian invasion of Poland, Latvia, expansionist behavior. Can you imagine a scenario where you sent Russian troops to Poland?
Only in one case, if Poland attacks Russia. Why? Because we have no interest in Poland, Latvia, or anywhere else.
Tucker Carlson said the interview was conducted in Moscow on Tuesday. Rick Pantaleo, VOA News.
You'll find expanded coverage of world news and events 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And for pictures, video stories, and more, follow the Voice of America on social media, including Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. This is VOA News. A former advisor to then-President Donald Trump has lost his bid to stay out of prison while he appeals a conviction for contempt of Congress. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
Peter Navarro, a close advisor to then-President Trump, was found guilty of defying a subpoena issued by the committee investigating the January 6th insurrection. He was sentenced to 4 months in prison. Navarro filed an appeal last month, his comments afterward drowned out by detractors outside the courthouse.
Whether a senior White House aide and alter ego of the president can be compelled to testify.
A U.S. District Judge, Amit Mehta, says Navarro must report to serve his sentence unless a federal appeals court intervenes. Navarro had said his prosecution stems from political bias, but the judge called that a, quote, cynical, self-serving claim. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The nation's cybersecurity agency is launching a program aimed at boosting election security in the states. Officials with the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency hope it will shore up support for local offices and provide reassurance to voters that this year's presidential elections will be safe and accurate. The agency, known as CISA, introduced its new Election Security Advisor program Thursday at the National Association of State Election Directors. Among the most daunting are potential cyber attacks by foreign governments. One agency official said, quote, nation-state adversaries China, Russia, Iran, North Korea are a particular concern. The European Union's Climate Change Monitoring Service reported Thursday last month was the warmest January on record. VOA's Jeff Custer reports.
The EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service reports 2023 was the planet's hottest year in global records going back to 1850, pointing to human-caused climate change and the warm Pacific Ocean water phenomenon El Niño for boosting the year's temperatures. But Britain's Royal Meteorological Society chief executive Liz Bentley told Reuters News even an entire year over the Paris Climate Conference standard does not mean it's too late.
We're not there yet. There's still an opportunity, a window of opportunity to dramatically reduce the amount of fossil fuels that we burn. So we know what the problem is, burning fossil fuels. We know what our limit is to try and stay below 1.5, and we have the solutions to get us there.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
The military says efforts are underway to recover the remains of five U.S. Marines who were killed when their helicopter went down during stormy weather in the mountains outside of San Diego. The military confirmed five deaths Thursday. Authorities say the CH-53E Super Stallion vanished late Tuesday night while conducting a flight training on their way back to Marine Corps Air Station Miramar from Creech Air Force Base. The craft was discovered Wednesday morning near the mountain community of Pine Valley. For additional stories 24 hours a day, visit voanews.com. I'm Alexis Strope, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, February 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. South African President Ramaphosa delivers his latest State of the Nation address.
He decided to cast his eyes back to 1994, when there was a sense of promise. The promise that Mandela spoke about. The reality today is that that idea remains very elusive.
Guinean labor unions announced a strike over rising prices. Cameroon rebels are dogging government officials in a fresh wave of attacks. South Sudan church and diplomat call for peaceful elections.
The best way forward to actualize the foundational values in our relationship is for South Sudan's leaders to act with urgency to hold credible and peaceful elections.
And three Sierra Leoneans are in this year's Budapest Bamako rally. Those stories plus our Black History Month presentation and Samson O'Malley's post at the African Cup of Nations in Ivory Coast are coming up on Daybreak Africa. President Cyril Ramaphosa has called on South Africans to celebrate the country's 30th democratic anniversary using their constitution as their basis. In his last State of the Nation address before the 2024 elections, Ramaphosa urged South Africans not to allow anyone to diminish vital democratic institutions. Professor Sipho Sipe is a political analyst and former Deputy Vice Chancellor for Institutional Support at the University of Zululand. He tells me President Ramaphosa misrepresented the South African reality.
What the president sought to do, that instead of looking at his own promises of the last 6 years, he decided to cast his eyes back to 1994, when there was a sense of promise. The promise that Mandela spoke about of a country in which all persons live in harmony and with equal opportunities. The reality today is that that ideal remains very elusive. And most commentators have said Ramaphosa's presidency has actually reversed all the gains that were made in the last 8 years.
Professor, first of all, let me go to the issue of energy. The president spoke about that. We know that South Africans have been experiencing this load shedding. Do you think the president addressed the issue to your satisfaction?
No. The people remember that the load shedding came after he took over. We had load shedding before during President Zuma's time, and that was resolved for 3 years. And once President Zuma stepped down, President Ramaphosa came in. That's when load shedding came back. So people are tired of his promise of ending load shedding. And he continues to repeat this. It is still amazing that when you have a challenge that is complex, you'll come up with simplistic solutions that you know full well will not work.
The president also spoke about crime and insecurity. He said that South Africans deserve to live freely. Your comment?
Well, that is correct. That's what we expect from any government. We have seen since he took over escalating crime, the rate of murders has increased. So we are not doing better as a country. So the president says all these things that people know to be obvious. But then what he does not own up is that under his administration, things have become worse. If we deal with the notion of corruption, the Transparency International and the Corruption Watch in South Africa, and also another survey by Afrobarometer, had indicated that under Ramaphosa, corruption has become worse. This is why the ANC has been progressively losing support. So what the president is saying is not consistent with reality.
President Ramaphosa highlighted South Africa's role in the Russia-Ukraine war, also the Israel-Hamas war. He reiterated that all conflicts must end through negotiations.
Well, there's nothing brilliant about that. That is a position that most countries have actually done. But what Ramaphosa has actually done is to always seek any opportunity for public relations. When they went to Ukraine and to Russia, they achieved nothing. All they said is exactly the same thing. There's no one in this world who does not believe that the negotiations are the best course of action. But for African leaders and our president, anything that gives them a photo opportunity is seen as a success. What South Africa has done with the International Court of Justice is the correct thing, because We, as a peace-loving people, we cannot sit idly and watch when we see some genocidal actions taking place. And for that, the president must be praised and South African government must be praised. But people at home are saying, in the same way that you're concerned about the land occupation there, what about the fact that the Africans in the country of their birth, in the country of their forebears, still occupy 11.5%? When are you going to address our issues at home?
Professor Sipho Sipho is a political analyst and a former deputy vice chancellor for institutional support at the University of Zululand. He was speaking with us from Johannesburg. In Guinea-Conakry, the most powerful labor unions have notified the government that they will hold a nationwide strike. The unions are calling for the immediate and unconditional release of the Secretary General of the Professional Private Press Association of Guinea and the reduction in prices of foodstuffs. Reporter Karim Kamara has more.
The Guinean government recently added a 20% charge on the cost of importing food into the country. This increase has had repercussions on the market prices of basic food items such as rice, which is a staple food, oil, flour and onions. To the dismay of consumers, the government has increased the price of a bag of rice in Conakry about 50% and about 70% in rural areas. Fatoumata Fofana is a market trader who has a request for junta leader Mamadi Doumbouya. She says he should try to alleviate the suffering. She says if a husband is not working and a wife's business is not flourishing, then families are facing hopeless struggle. She says Doumbouya must try to develop the country. Hardship has increased for average Guineans since fuel depot in Conakry caught fire in December. Economist Mohamed Kamara blames the government for the price increases and warns that Guinea is heading for high inflations. He says low-class families in Conakry spend 60% of their revenues on food and they are directly affected by price increases. He says inflation will worsen if there is not a sufficient amount of local food product to meet consumers' need. The government and importers signed an agreement last month not to add a cent above what the current price of rice per bag, oil, flour and onions. The Minister of Commerce, Lupo Lama, has warned of dire consequences for anyone who violates the agreement. She says they are asking the business community to make sure that the objective behind the agreement is respected. She says a hotline, 142, is open to report all violations, whether it is the retention of goods or added price increases. The government agreed to supply the Guinean market with food items and with reasonable prices this year. But according to traders and consumers, the government has done nothing to meet its promises, and this is why prices of rice and other food continue to rise despite government threats. Labor unions have remained silent despite reports of poor governance, corruption, and human rights violations by the junta. But now, they have for the first time accused the junta of starving Guineans and have notified the government that they will strike in the days to come. Kader Aziz Kamara is a spokesman for the unions. He says they have notified the government and their next action will be to set a date for a nationwide strike. He says they are calling on all social groups affected by the incarceration of Sekou Pandessa, the Secretary General of the Private Press Association of Guinea, who was arrested after he called for a street protest by journalists. The International Confederation of Labour Unions, based in Geneva, and those in Africa, including rights groups in Guinea, are calling for the immediate and unconditional release of Pandessa, but to no avail. Pandessa was arrested after he called for a protest by journalists to denounce the high-handedness on the press by the junta. He has since been charged with taking part in an unlawful gathering and disturbing public peace. For VOA Africa, I am Karim Kamara in Conakry.
The head of the Anglican Communion in South Sudan, Justin Badi Arama, says the church is working to prepare the country for a peaceful election. He calls on South Sudanese leaders and people to put the nation above any other interest. Also, Michael J. Adler, U.S. ambassador to South Sudan, says his country's key policy in South Sudan is focused on peace through free and fair elections. For VOA News, Mayang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Speaking during the launch of a church civic education program for the elections, Justin Badi Arama, the head of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the church wants to see the coming elections is entirely peaceful.
As we set forth to enlighten our people about elections and to monitor their safety during the transition, we will present the same message to them. We will emphasize that peace can only prevail if every citizen put the nation's interests before their partisan interests and affiliations. The ECS proposal on election seeks to contribute to a peaceful, credible transition elections.
On Monday, a Vatican official visiting South Sudan, Cardinal Michael Zeni, called on South Sudanese leaders to work for peaceful, fair and credible elections in December. Arama, who is also the primate of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan and Archbishop of the Diocese of Juba, says the church is concerned about a fragile and insecure environment following a series of communal conflicts and cattle raids in different parts of the country.
We must work for the stability of our country because citizens are the ones suffering, whether extension or no extension, whether violence. The whole thing comes on citizens. That's why we must stand as a church to help our citizens understand the truth. This role is not just an obligation, but a biblical mandate. We read in Hosea 4:6 that my people perish for lack of knowledge.
In speaking at the same event, U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan Michael J. Idler says a peaceful election is central to his country's policy on South Sudan.
It is our conviction that the best way forward to actualize the foundational values in our relationship is for South Sudan's leaders to act with urgency and in a consultative and inclusive manner to take the steps necessary to hold credible and peaceful elections by December 24. And these elections must be peaceful. The South Sudanese people have suffered far too long.
Some South Sudanese political parties say the transitional government of national unity has done very little to prepare the country for free and fair elections in December. The former rebels of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement in opposition insisted on the completion of a permanent constitution and the completion of security arrangements before the December polls. Ambassador Idela urged the South Sudanese political leaders to ensure these demands are urgently addressed to ensure the electoral process is peaceful and credible. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty, Washington. Today is Friday, February 9th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. A California museum on Thursday returned seven royal artifacts to Ghana's traditional Ashanti king to commemorate his silver jubilee in the first planned handovers of Ashanti treasures looted during colonial times. The French news agency AFP says that the ceremony came as a pressure grows for European and U.S. museums and institutions to restore African artifacts stolen during the rule of former colonial powers Britain, France, Germany, and Belgium. The Ashanti monarch Otumfuo Osei Tutu II, who holds an important ceremonial role in Ghana, said their return would help reunite his people. Three Sierra Leoneans in the 2024 Budapest to Bamako rally are driving some 9,000 kilometers or 549 miles from Hungary in Europe to Sierra Leone across two continents. This year's rally ends in Sierra Leone because of the political military situation in its usual final destination, Bamako, Mali. Ibrahim Cole is one of three Sierra Leoneans. He tells me that he is participating in the rally to raise awareness about autism because one of his children has the condition.
It's a big issue in Sierra Leone that when the Budapest rally comes to town, everybody wants to see it. It's an opportunity that I saw to raise awareness for autism, which is a charity that we have been doing over the past few years through the banner of Puzzle Pieces Sierra Leone. So I saw it as an opportunity to not only get the world knowing that we're raising funds and awareness for Puzzle Pieces in Sierra Leone, but also for Sierra Leoneans to be proud that the Sierra Leonean did finally get involved with the Budapest rally.
Why autism? Do you have any connection to autism?
My firstborn son is autistic, and the connection is quite simple. We had the funds to go through therapy, and he's living what we would like to see as a normal developing life. A lot of kids in Sierra Leone don't have that opportunity. Once they are diagnosed, or some of them don't even go diagnosed, they just leave them behind because they're not growing at the normal rate of a regularly developing child. So that scene, I just thought it was an unfortunate position for most parents in Sierra Leone not able to provide therapy for their kids. So we come in and we help with supporting schools that accommodate children with autism. And we're looking to do things a little bit different in the future, which is providing therapy for kids instead of sending them away to go do it.
This rally is called the Budapest to Bamako Rally. Now, how does Freetown get involved in this?
Okay, so it was called the Budapest to Bamako Rally because they used to end at in Mali, but political tensions and all that, I think it ended up moving to Freetown a couple of years ago. So now the rally is actually from Budapest, Hungary to Freetown, Sierra Leone. So that's how it ended up in Sierra Leone.
I assume you are not driving on a paved road most of the time. Please put me in your car or whatever you're driving. What is it like?
Me and my teammates, Benjamin George, who is an artist from Sierra Leone, and also my brother, Mohammed Ibrahim, we have actually gone through this process in a different way. We look at the beauty of nature, look at the beauty of Europe, look at the beauty of Africa, and compare and contrast, you know. So as Sierra Leoneans, we're used to going up to the provinces, so we're used to some of these bumpy roads. But trust me when I say the beauty of the world removes your attention from the bad roads and the challenging things that you go through this rally.
Ibrahim Cole is one of the three Sierra Leoneans participating in this year's Budapest to Bamako rally. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abidjan, Ivory Coast, at the African Cup of Nations. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport from here in Abidjan, where the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations is in the home stretch. South Africa and Democratic Republic of Congo will be looking at buying out in style at the 2023 Africa Cup of Nations being hosted by Cote d'Ivoire. Both sides were knocked out of the title race during the semi-finals, where Bafana Bafana were edged 4-2 on penalties after a 1-1 draw with the Super Eagles of Nigeria, while the DR Congo lost by a slim 1-0 margin against host Cote d'Ivoire. While both sides will be disappointed with the semi-final exit, the third and fourth place playoff presents the perfect opportunity for either side to go home with the consolation of being the third best team of the competition. Hugo Bruce is the South African coach.
We try to have more movement in the team, and I think we succeeded. When you see us playing today, there's a lot of movement in the team. There's a lot of depth in the team. There's a lot of vertical passes. We defend good. So tactically, I think we progressed also.
The third place match is scheduled to be played at Abidjan's Félix Houphouët-Boigny Stadium on Saturday, the 10th of February. Staying with the AFCON 2023, host Cote d'Ivoire completed their comeback journey by reaching the finals of the CAF Africa Cup of Nations Cote d'Ivoire 2023, where they will meet Nigeria in what has been billed to be a classic final. The finals of the CAF Africa Cup of Nations will be played on Sunday, 11th of February, at the Alassane Ouattara Stadium in Ebimpe, Abidjan. Jose Pissarro is the coach of the Super Eagles.
I see our team is suffering. It was chalk for us. You lose the balance. But the break before next time is put together. It's put together. And they go for extra time with all the confidence, all the capacity, and create more opportunity than than the opponent.
Meanwhile, the last phase of ticket sales went on sale on Thursday afternoon for members of the public. Journalists covering the AFCON 2023 have described this year's AFCON as one of the best organized tournaments in recent times.
So far, so good. It's been top-notch compared to what we experienced in Cameroon. I can't but say kudos to the organizing committee of this tournament. From the stadiums to the media center, everything has been top-notch.
Yeah, I've been impressed, especially moving from other towns. I've not only been in Abidjan, I've been in Bouake, I've been in San Pedro. The organization is really great and it's been impressive so far.
Organization of this kind, it's very good. For me, it's very good. Also, Bouake.
And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. It's time now for our Black History Month presentation, and joining us is Akwasi Ajema, CEO of the Ghana Tourism Authority. He explains to me the activities that Ghana is engaged in with the diaspora as part of its initiative called Beyond the Return, the follow-up to the successful campaign called Year of Return.
There are a few things that we are doing. I mean, in keeping to our project called Beyond the Return, which is a 10-year project celebrating African Renaissance, we have different engagements. Back home, we are collaborating with the African American Association of Ghana. So there are a series of activities, lectures, film shows, conversations that are going on. And then in the U.S., we have a partnership with Howard University, which we know is one of the most influential HBCUs that has churned out very, very prominent and influential African Americans. And so this partnership dates about 3 years ago. So every year we engage Howard University and its students on activities to celebrate Black History Month. This year, we have two pillars that we are using. There is a film called Tuntum. Tuntum is a local dialect. It means black. And this film is an animated movie that traces the origin of the black man. And so that is going to be premiered at Howard University on the 21st of February. And then on the 22nd, another pillar we are using is the music. And so one of our finest musicians, Samini, who is doing a tour in the U.S., will engage with the Warner Music Center at Howard University to talk about black music, the African music, how the junction between African music and American hip-hop, I mean, how these two could be fused and how we could jointly promote music between Africans on the continent and Africans in the diaspora. There is a Black History Festival that is also happening, being put together by a group from Ghana. This is the third year, and that is also something that showcases the various investment opportunities on the continent and in Ghana, and also highlights some of the talent that we have here.
Akwasi Ajeman is the CEO of the Ghana Tourism Authority. He was speaking with us from the capital, Accra. And that's it for this Friday, February 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV show, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday.